I think good stewardship ties into beauty. Does this building deserve to be built? What are the resources going into it? What life will it have?
Circulation of the building, the flow of it, how the inside reacts with the outside. Good architecture takes that inside and outside, melds it all together in a way that people feel like they are enjoying the environment even when they're in the building.
Hello, and welcome to Working with me, Dan Doriani, hosting a podcast where we explore faith, work, culture, and the way believers can make a difference in their corner of the world. Hello, everyone. Glad to receive you for this chapter of the Faith and Work podcast. Today, I have with me two of my favorite people in the whole world, Tyler Stevens, whom I've known for many years, and Sarah Doriani, whom I have known for even more years. They're both in a field that we have not spent time on in this podcast yet, and that is the field of architecture, building, design, creating living spaces and working spaces for people. So Tyler, welcome. Sarah, welcome. Tyler, would you just spend a moment telling us what you do for a living? What's your title, if that's germane? And then after you're done, Sarah will do the same.
Yes, thank you, Dan. So my name is Tyler Stevens. I am one of the principals at Corten Architecture, which is an architecture firm that a partner and I started in 2007. So we've been doing that since then. We do a variety of different things, from mostly commercial in nature, but on the residential side, we do a lot of multifamily living, condominium buildings, things like that.
That's great. Hearing the number 2007 reminds me that you started at an inopportune time for your industry. We'll come back to that.
Great, yes.
And pick up on what you do when you start a business, and then you find out you did it at the worst possible time. Sarah, what is your title? What do you do?
I am a principal, also at my firm, a slightly different firm, a multidisciplinary group that provides architectural services for a larger design-build conglomerate. I am a principal and design leader for the interior design group, so I call myself an interior designer. And we'll get into a little bit more of how that plays out in a commercial and mostly workplace environment.
Yeah, great. So let's just follow up a tiny bit on your self-introductions. Tyler, you did start a business, so you're a principal in a slightly different sense than ordinarily. Mm-hmm. Sarah, you're in a part of an organization that is a multi-billion dollar firm.
Yeah.
So just a tiny bit more about size and scope and what it means to start a business. Sarah, what it means to be in a very big work environment.
Absolutely.
Tyler, you first.
Sure. I actually was in a similar spot of Sarah before this, working for a different firm, and was in line to become a partner. And some of the topics that we're going to talk about today in terms of integrating your faith are one of the reasons that I made the decision not to go down that path, to do my own thing, so that I'd have a little bit more control over it. Mm-hmm. It does mean you give up size. We have 10 people, mm-hmm. so we're not a large firm. That caps our project volume a little bit. It doesn't mean we don't want to design large firms or large projects, and we certainly can, but clients somehow seem to think that you need
500
people
or 1,000
to design a big building, which is not true. But
right. I hear that. Sarah, what's it like for you to work in an environment with many people in your workplace?
Many people, yes. It's many thousands, actually. And it is a great joy to me. And I'll say that that's decidedly been a good fit for me. And so I enjoy plugging into and working with many different types and sizes of groups. So I see that as part of not only what is required of me, but also a joy that it gives to me as well. So being part of this also means, you know, understanding a different culture. Tyler mentioned having a sense of control and really having, I think, some autonomy when you start striking out on your own and saying, this is what we're about and this is what we're going to do. And for me, that is on a smaller scale. I am a leader of a 25-person interiors group. And so I co-lead. I'm by no means the sole head of that group. It's crafting culture in a much more great environment. And so how do we fit and how do we become wonderful team players that, you know, broaden the work of the others?
Well, that's a good point, because even at a small scale, I still have a partner.
Of course, yes.
So, you know, I don't get to make unilateral decisions. Mm-hmm. We're always on a team.
And even in a greater sense, the team is the client, the team is the build partner, right. The team is somebody else, because somebody has to hire us too.
Right. Nobody's autonomous. If you own your own business, you are not autonomous. I think if we know anything from this podcast series, we know that no one can just do whatever they want. That's a good way to go bankrupt or have no customers. Would you just make sure we understand the difference between an architect and a designer?
Uh-huh.
Can we do that? You two talk it through.
I'll let start us out. What is architecture?
Well,
in 700-word, no, yeah, 150 words or less.
Interesting. As an architect, I look at projects from the property line outward, mm-hmm. which means I like to think about how our buildings affect the neighborhood, community, the street, the environment around us, and set up a building that's an infrastructure for people to interact and live in. I often say that we design the canvas and then hand it to the designer to paint the painting inside.
Mm-hmm. I would want to work differently, but I think this is the perfect tee up, because I focus on, as an interior designer, I am focused on what is within. However, in the dream scenario, and we can get into that later, the dream scenario is that we have this great symbiosis between our different partners, and we push and pull and say, change your this, push your that. As opposed to finish the envelope, hand it off.
Right.
The goal is that we're back and forth and creating something that is both beautiful and helpful to behold from the boundary without, and then also within.
It should be a cohesive thing if it's going to be successful.
Yes.
So I've heard both of you talk about this. Tyler, you have spoken to me pretty eloquently, if I may say so, about contributing to the city that you're in, integrating the look of your building with the look of the city, maybe enhancing it, or finding not necessarily a linear coherence, but some kind of coherence with the environment you're in. Sarah, when you talk about your work, you tend to hit themes like creating good seats, good spaces for work, good lighting, mm-hmm. An atmosphere in which people can do their work well. They don't get exhausted by, bad chairs, bad light, bad tables, and nobody gets lost. Nobody's unsafe in their building.
Yeah.
Especially a big building, which you tend to work on. Fill that out a little bit. Am I right, wrong? Is that an accurate way of describing the differences between the two of you, even as you collaborate?
Absolutely. And I'll fill in. You've picked up on the theme, and I mentioned I really spend a lot of my time on workplace design. So that's, for lack of better words, the corporate environment. My work has expanded to many other disciplines or markets as well. But the sense of obvious safety. Are you building a safe building? That's, you don't get a permit. You don't get permission to proceed if you don't. But then there are separations in that safety realm, which is psychological safety, mm-hmm. comfort, the desire to be there, the desire to connect with other people. Can you create spaces that enhance cultural goals, build relationships and trust? These are the things that excite me in the terms of creating and shaping space and arranging it in such a way. And of course, eventually, as an interior designer, I pick a paint color. But it's a broad spectrum of those things.
Yeah, and I do want to flesh out a little bit of that, because I don't want to give the impression that as architects, we don't consider the inside of the building.
Right, of course you do. Right.
Spaces that are created inside where people move around, the circulation of the building, the flow of it. How the inside reacts with the outside, how they go mm-hmm. together. That's all very important. I personally, in terms of this topic of faith and how we set up buildings, I personally strive for buildings where the inside and the outside almost bleed.
Seamlessly.
You almost don't know when you went in the building
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. I think the ideal, we were created to be in the outdoor environment, mm-hmm. set in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I think deep down, most people desire to be outside mm-hmm. as long as it's comfortable.
Right.
So good architecture takes that inside and outside, melds it all together in a way that people feel like they are enjoying the environment even when they're in the building.
Mm. And they may not even know why. So it just so happens that I've been in buildings that both of you designed. And Tyler, you designed exactly one church, and I was interim pastor and preached there and was in the building any number of times for a couple of years. And I just loved the building. I loved it. It's a very community-oriented, friendly, outgoing church, and you created a lot of spaces that facilitated the expression of the social convivial nature of the church. Sarah, the space I was in that you designed, which actually won an award, as I recall, was spectacular enough that when I walked in, I said, wow, this is beautiful. And then we walked into another space and the light was just so inviting. I loved the light, which included light coming in from the outside and light from above, the lights that were purchased. So let me just say that and let you riff off it and describe what you love. What do you love about your work? You can comment on the places I just mentioned. And how do you love people through your work?
The days that feel most engaging and exciting are the days that, not dissimilar to this conversation, we're working in symbiosis with the different disciplines. It's seamless and unclear whose boundary, whose scope is what. I love to work with the architects. I love to work with the landscape designers. And if that boundary of interior, exterior blurs, this is true joy, because I think we all do, whether we acknowledge it or not, love nature and love to be informed by that. And so my very, very favorite day is a fast-paced project. There's not much going. We've got a blank canvas and we get three of my favorite partners to, you know, different disciplines, like I said before, and we're riffing on how is it going to fit? How's it going to go together? And I like a little bit of the adrenaline of that. That's what is totally awesome and fun. Yeah. Because ultimately you're bringing the most pure goals of the project into that space for that couple day, couple week. Session. Right. And eventually you do get into the details that I admit are not my most favorite.
Like, can we afford it or will it follow the rules of the local situation?
Yeah, and local we actually need to have this additional air handling closet that's going to, you know, have to fit somewhere. Those are all very good and fine things.
We never have those.
Never. but that's what brings joy. And then I think there are two levels of love, and that is providing as best as possible this joyful space that not only meets needs, but provides beauty, enhances the life, the experience, both inside and outside. That's the ultimate goal in our craft. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're talking about what is work. I think there's also the element of, are you a good team player? And can you be doing the work in a way that respects one another, respects the ideas that are coming together and the different priorities that are at play? Because it's not always my idea that carries forward interruption.
Right. Nobody has all the answers on a team. Tyler, what do you love about your work?
Well, I'll tell you a story about the first condo that I ever did. This is what made me fall in love with condos. I hadn't thought about it before. To me, it was just houses that are all stacked together, really. Mm. And we finished this building and I was getting a tour of it after it was done. And one of the people that bought was an older couple. And this little lady was walking me through her condo unit. It was in the building and she was dragging me from room to room. And she said, oh, I'm so excited to meet the architect and you did such a great job. Mm-hmm. And I want you to see the closet in my master bedroom, because I had some shelves put in and I decided to hang my dresses here and put my shoes over there and my shirts here. What do you think? I really love the way this works. She was so excited to show me her closet. Mm. And I thought, wow, the closet, honestly, I didn't really think that much about it. It was a box. It was a square, you know.
But it was the right box.
But I guess in the placement of how it flows in the room, and she was able to take it and make it into something personal. And it really touched me that my work affects someone who's actually living there. This is her home.
Right.
This is not even just a place she goes once a week. This is her home.
Right.
And so I love that on the one end. That's the very personal interior, tight, small detail. On the opposite end, I love the fact that I can do a building in a community. Most of our work is here in St. Louis. And so I can do a building in a community where I know a lot of people who go by that building every day. And they will come to me and say, oh, I just saw that building you did down the street. I love how it fits into this block and it does this with that other building, et cetera. That notion of they recognize the work, they recognize how it's contributing and they appreciate it and then can tell me that directly. that's a great day.
That's amazing. Because, you know, if you make, let's say if you prepare food, make food, sell food at a whatever form that takes, it's gone. I mean, it's just, you don't have a lasting monument to meals you made. But I mean, a nice building, good building, like a really good chair, can last 100 years, 200 years. And you know, people you'll never meet will be enjoying that chair, we might say, or that building, and that work environment will live on long after you've left this world.
That's if you do it well.
If you do it well.
Now, there's the opposite of that, where if you do a bad job, it will live on.
Yeah, that's right.
I have affected that community for a long time.
Yeah, so let me comment on something very concrete. So you designed a building that I have preached in many times. I consider it the easiest building to preach in that I've ever been in because everybody's close. And it holds 400 some people, but the farthest person away is, you could hit them with a dart with a light motion. Everybody's close. And I'm sure you designed it that way. And Sarah, you know that space as well. So comment on that, or just on maybe some time when everything turned out just the way you wanted and it's beautiful and serves people.
I do like that building. I mean, I'm proud of that building too.
Yeah.
And we have to give a lot of the credit to the pastor at the time, Tom Ricks,
right?
Because he was pretty vocal with me about how he wanted a preaching environment. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those things, like the little half, that has a little half round stage that goes out into the seats rather than just being up.
Right.
He wanted that specifically.
Yeah. So that's back to the teamwork Sarah was talking about.
Right.
You know, everybody has their input. They have an idea, you help them execute the idea. Just to label that for a second, go ahead.
We did several, I have half a dozen diagrams in my office of ways to fit 400 chairs in proximity to a speaking point in different shapes.
Right.
And the theater in the round, you know, maybe is the most obvious in how you get these theater shapes, but that to me was not congregational. And there's a difference. Being in a church is not like sitting in a
theater. And a worship service is not the same thing, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there was a lot of study with taking a cathedral plan, which is a very traditional church layout, which has worked for thousands of years.
Although very few people would say it's their first choice today.
Exactly.
Right.
But if you'll notice, that church is a cathedral layout.
I would say highly modified.
The proportions have been adjusted.
Yes.
Very highly modified.
But it's still a linear diagram as opposed to a radial diagram.
Yes.
Where there is a back and a front and an aisle and symmetrical.
And right angles and so forth.
Yes.
But it doesn't come across that way, which you know quite well. Sarah, you can talk about that particular project or something else you just loved that was a beautiful moment in your career. Designing spaces.
I think, and Tyler touched on it, the greatest joy is when you have a client who is also the end user, because it is fascinating to know this person is going to use it. Mm-hmm. That has clear ideas, an openness to be collaborative, and willingness to share their experience and opinions. So that balance of open and close. I'm struggling to come up with a project to talk about, but I'll speak of a very tiny, tiny project that is one of my favorites because I've gotten to live and work with it. It is a cafe added to my office this past year. We hired a chef and culinary staff as part of an effort to really appreciate and incorporate mealtime as office culture as we bring people back into the office. And so we designed a cafe there that was meant to change the tone of the space. We work in a large industrial office space. And so suddenly this cafe became a teeny tiny intimate lounge environment that 300 people cycle through each day. And it has given great joy. Now, it is not without, many people giving input and feedback and opportunity for improvement
design architectural
constantly.
Firm,
it is difficult to be your own client at times, but it was a great collaboration also. And so with that, we enhanced patios and connected to the outdoors. And I think it's been a real celebration, not only to use the space, but to celebrate that it's different. than the other.
It strikes me that you're one of the people that uses this space.
It's remarkable.
Rarely,
yes.
Which is also a great experience when you are actually the person using the space that you designed along with other people and seeing how that all works. It's like eating at a restaurant that you designed the layout of.
It is, but every day.
Well, that's a good reminder.
Yeah. It is.
That's good.
And by no means is it like the capstone of design projects,
right,
but it's intimate. And it was a big change and I think very rewarding in the way that people are proud to bring their clients in instead of going out for lunch.
Which was one of the chief goals.
Yeah.
So we've been very happy so far. Let me switch to the question of Christian terminology, the fall and sin and evil in the world. How do you take out the garbage in your field? What's the challenge?
Well, I know we've talked many times in the past about the element of water.
Mm-hmm.
And
we like water.
Water is the most intriguing thing to me on the planet. It is completely necessary for life, and yet it is the bane of our existence. It destroys everything.
Everything?
Everything. Water is the only element that expands when it gets cold and freezes, and that everything else contracts. That fact alone destroys everything we create.
Concrete, foundations.
All of it. You get water in it, freeze, thaw, expansion, contraction, not to mention rot, mildew. Organic surfaces.
Yeah, anything's organic, right?
Mm-hmm. So water is a constant challenge that we are always fighting against. It takes a lot of the fun to me out of building buildings because of the details and the waterproofing and the
get the water away from the building, get the water away from surfaces that don't like water.
Necessary evil.
Hmm.
Those Palm Spring houses look so much more desirable when you're not contending with.
When they design in the desert, they can be so creative.
They'd be great except for the springs of water. Palm Springs except for the springs. Sarah, how do you take out the garbage?
Oh, my thought pattern here was so different. The business of doing design is mucky sometimes. And it comes down to, you know, professional services all require some caretaking. And I would say the most challenging element of that is when you have a sticking point with your client. When the client comes in and says, and to be honest, it's a very different perspective than Tyler's, and Tyler works with the outside environment more tangibly. When the client wants a thing, and they come to you with a challenge and they say, we want to be better. We want to do this differently. And then you discover over time, they don't want to do this differently. Mm-hmm. They want to do it the exact same way, but to have hired you to do it their way.
They want to say they want to be different, but they don't actually want to be different.
Right. And so there's this rub of how do we, in good faith, push them to do what's right with the space, do what's right for their people.
Because ultimately, their stated goals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
They don't often know what's good for them.
That's where the best clients are the ones that have some light touch. And they say, we trust you. We believe. Show us what's
you're
next.
The pros. We're not.
Right. And I would say every single industry has this parallel of that tightly holding control of not wanting to release to a different idea or to a different way of doing things. I think that can be especially difficult as you lead young team members who have the idealistic thread in their minds of what should be done and the righteous anger of we must. And there's still yet that balance of this is our client and we do need to serve them and still do what they need or want and prod them as much as possible. There's not a solution. It's just some tricky business.
It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
But we can take these negatives, though, and turn them to a positive.
Okay.
So, for instance, going back to what I was saying about details, I am not a detail-oriented person. Mm-hmm. I'm a big picture thinker.
Both of you are big picture more than detail.
So, I let the strong people
that's
do
right.
that.
And that's the whole point of having a good team. One of the privileges that I have as the owner of the company is hiring people and interviewing them and finding out what their strengths are and what their passions are and finding people to fit. I have a guy who works for us who loves this whole notion of details and minutia of code compliance and things like that. That's not me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that needs to be done in order to produce a good product. So since I don't want to do it, I hire someone who loves doing it, then he is fulfilled in his role and his job as well. This is the good blend of teamwork.
This is 100% the case. And I am very much aligned with you in this. It is such a celebration that we do not all have the same skills
right.
or passions.
Well, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with an architect who said, I love making sure a wall is exactly where it's supposed to be, not 1 centimeter off.
Is he in Europe?
It doesn't matter where
it is. Centimeter, possibly.
Well, maybe here. I said centimeter. Maybe they said 10th of an inch. I don't know. But they love the idea of getting everything in exactly the right space. And I thought, I know a lot of people would find that to be tedious, like, you know, like putting, you know, like a cheese grater on your finger. Very unpleasant.
Uh-huh. That's true. There are people who love those kinds of things, the minutia of it all. But there are also people who are just skilled and gifted at various aspects. I mean, we got mm-hmm. Sarah here is gifted and skilled in, and I know that's not all you do, but let's just take color selection, for sure. instance. You know color theory pretty well, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can show you some brick and say it's this color range. What trim would be really good with this? And you could come up with 3 great options.
Yes.
I know my personal preferences, but I'm not as good at doing
presenting options.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So because of all these different aspects of design, you can fold in a lot of different people and their own skill sets.
Yeah. I hate to interrupt, but we need to stop and have a little break to hear from our sponsor. When we get back, yes. we're going to hear a little bit more about the leading principles for builders and designers.
Hi, I'm John Perkins, Executive Director of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. You've been listening to our podcast, Working with Dan Doriani. The Center also offers conferences on faith and work throughout the United States. Our goal is to equip formal and informal leaders to make a difference in their corner of the world. We equip Christian leaders to run 10-hour faith and work cohorts on 3 continents. Please visit our website at faithandworkstl.org to see how your church or organization can form a faith and work cohort for people who have, or aspire to, a leadership role in their workplace. Now, back to Dan.
So welcome back to part 2 of our program. And I want to start with a little bit of a new topic. What are the top rules, the most basic principles you have for your work? I told you beforehand I was going to read Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 8, which is probably the only Bible verse that explicitly describes how you go about putting up buildings. And the principle is safety. And it says this, when you build a new house, you shall put a parapet around your roof, that you may not bring the guilt of blood upon your house if anyone should fall from it. So that's a safety ruling. In those days, if I may comment on ancient architecture, mm-hmm. people needed a parapet, which is a low retaining wall or a safety wall, like safety fences we have, because most homes were 1 room, maybe 2. And then there was an external stairway going to the roof where people would hang out when the temperature was, you know, moderate. And they would sometimes sleep there in the hot times of the year. They would store things in the dry season. And so it was a place where people spent a lot of time. And it said to a culture that was not wealthy, right, that you can't build a building unless you can make it safe for the people who come. And it is a I am my brother's keeper kind of moment. You might say, well, I'd never fall off a roof. Right. But, you know, Jumpin' Jehoshaphat, who's 4 years old, might pitch off the roof while playing too vigorously. Or Aunt Abishag, who's an active sleeper, might roll off into a gorse bush at night. And so you are responsible to take care of the people who use your space. There are a couple other places in the Bible that talks about principles, but not much. Mostly it says, be mindful of your neighbor to make sure things are safe. Don't let people find their way into danger. So those are the only real principles I know from the Bible. You have all kinds of principles that help you discern how to love your neighbor, how to love the people that you work for.
I've heard you quote that verse before.
Yes.
And I always feel a little guilty whenever I do a building that doesn't have a parapet on the roof, even though it's not required.
Probably doesn't have an external stair.
No, but
right.
I think today, because of our litigious culture, which mm-hmm. brings about a whole onslaught of maybe pharisaical rules that we have to abide by in the building code. For me, I actually have the opposite reaction where I'm trying to like push against the rules as much as possible because they're so onerous.
Yeah.
Just, but you have other rules that you use. They may not be rules like safety rules, but you have rules like make people want to live in this space or work in this building.
And that what you quoted there is an explicit rule from scripture. I think there are a lot of implicit rules.
Yes, good.
Which there are structures that God designed himself.
And
such
they're
as
beautiful, for
the
example.
The temple.
Yeah, right.
The ark is another one. The instructions were given. And if you just look at those instructions, you'll see things like proportion, symmetry, scale, rhythm. All of these things are elements that were in there. And those are, if these are direct designs by God, then it would imply at least that
an
we should use
of
those
scale and symmetry
type.
And
yeah, we should not take a piece of paper a la Frank Gehry and wad it up and throw it on the table and call it a building.
Frank Gehry, I presume, is actually, I know this, is a famous person in the field.
And yes, and if he's listening, I'm sorry, Frank, I don't like the way you go about designing your buildings.
Yes. So can I just say also beauty, right? I mean, the temple was designed with very specific colors that were beautiful colors. And so as much aesthetic pleasure as possible is implicit in the temple.
I think of, as Tyler mentioned, the rules are onerous now to create a safe building. So you're in modern time, you're not in much danger of getting an unsafe building approved and built. Mm-hmm. But there are secondary levels of, I would say, rules, and they're not so firm and fast, but I would hearken to good stewardship. And that is, I think good stewardship ties into beauty. Does this deserve to be built? Can it be better? Can it improve people's space and lives? And then the much more prescient topic, which is stewardship of our resources, which is, does this building deserve to be built? Can something else be reused? What is its toll on the environment? What are the resources going into it? What life will it have? As Tyler mentioned, please do a good job because it might be here for 200 years, even if you don't. And so we now have so much more information about the materials. We've talked about carbon footprints. I think everybody's familiar with that. But what is actually the embedded energy? And how can we be good stewards of not just the building that's going up, but what are the materials that are going into it? How is it going to function in a way that can foresee changing environments? What energy will it require later on? We talk a lot about building skins and how efficient they are. Mm-hmm. Will it require three times more energy to heat and cool it in the future? Are there pieces of inspiration to take from? And I love that you brought up that God laid out instructions on how to build, but I would also say we look at our environment, at beehives, at trees, at microstructures. That is the ultimate inspiration for beauty and building and self-healing and sustainable structure. And so I think there's some care that we need to take, not just for our today building and getting a cleanable, bleachable floor in as fast as possible, but also foreseeing what does this do in the long run? Where does it go when it gets taken down?
What happens to the
materials
that are being disposed of? Let me just comment on two things quickly, just to make sure our listeners understand. Embedded energy, I believe, means not just what are you using to heat and cool it, but the embedded energy is what energy it took to create these materials that will be there for a long time. Right. So, you know, our cell phones, which we all have, you know, nearby, don't seem to take very much energy, but enormous energy went into putting the wires in the ground, the towers and so forth. And people think, oh, it only uses a tiny bit of energy. But the system uses vast amounts of energy. That's embedded energy. But then I love the question, do we need this building? Because in every city, there are buildings that are at the wrong place, maybe, or neglected, but they're still really good buildings that could be repurposed, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe both of you have worked on keeping structures going.
And it's hard work. It is harder to preserve at times.
I was just in Melbourne, we call it Melbourne, Australia. And there, one of the things I saw is, 50 story skyscrapers coming out of what seemed to be a shell that was built 150 years ago, colonial era. Mm-hmm. I thought, what is going on here? And the answer is they preserved the shell and then they shot mm-hmm. up within, which I'm guessing was a lot more work than just starting a new building. But there are other buildings that are excellent and should not be discarded or superannuated, if I can use that word, by simply being in the wrong place and getting ignored and run down. Mm-hmm. Yes? No?
Yes, but that's very difficult. Mm-hmm. This is the challenge of you know, we don't operate in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And buildings are not easy to move. I'm not going to say impossible, but they're not easy.
Extremely difficult, yeah.
So the location that it's in is what it is. And we deal with this all the time where we have this wonderful building in a terrible location mm-hmm. in the city of St. Louis.
And in every city, I presume.
It could be in any city. But and you say, who's ever going to want to use that or be in this location to do something there? Someday, somebody might want to do that. But you have to wait on the timing of the entire community for when that mm-hmm. area is then a desirable place to put something.
Demographic forces far beyond your control.
You can't just, and you also can't force one building. Right now, we're working on a building, a large hospital building, I'll say, that was is replacing one that was recently demolished. And the building that was demolished was almost the same size as the one we're putting there. They're both hospitals. You'd say, well, what was the point of that? The other building was built in the 1960s and has pretty short floor-to-floor spacing, not a lot of room for modern equipment of HVAC ductwork and everything, so it was considered obsolete, even though that's a really big building with a lot of embodied energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't always control all
of this. No, absolutely not. But there is I think the stewardship then is also what is the need? The need is also to save people.
Mm-hmm.
In a human close life, proximity to, you know, the emergent medical care that's presumably on the same campus.
Right.
And fit in the medical technology that is now necessary for a 14-foot floor-to-floor height, or probably less than that, but something along those lines. And by no means is that the overarching rule set, but it's a lens to review things and contemplate why.
Let me ask you two more questions. We can do both of them or one of them as you see fit. I want to ask you, how important is it and how can you treat people in the supply chain well? Because you both are responsible for a lot of materials usage in the long run. Mm-hmm. One, you don't have to answer that one. And second, you've both alluded at times to how creation or the order of nature, the God-given world we dwell in, shapes the way you build things, the way you think about building and designing.
For me personally, it's just... be a person of honesty and integrity with everyone you work with. When you say you're going to do something, you do it. You stand up to your word and be, you know, treat them like they are worthy of respect, regardless of where they are in the supply chain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
100%. I also see these people as my partners, product representatives, as well as the actual physical supply chain. But these people are helping actualize the project. Mm-hmm. They will work with me and say, I'll cut my margins if I need to make this into your project. They're willing to ebb and flow and put pressure on the installers or oversee things so that they don't get overlooked. They are important partners. And like Tyler mentioned, that respect that they are critical components to any success, I think is worth our mutual respect.
That's great. Thanks. You both touched on creation and how it affects your work. Do you want to say anything more than what you said already?
I'll say in terms of the environment, I'm glad that you brought up the environment because that was one thing I was going to talk about. That to me, that's a critical part of what we do. When you're working on buildings, you're an artist who's building a building in the environment. Mm-hmm. So it's different than a painting in a museum. And there are things that about the way this world was set up. The sun rises in the east, it goes across the southern sky, and it sets in the west, at least in the United States.
In the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
That's right.
We do have listeners in Brazil might object.
Then flip all this around in here. But the point is that when you set up a building, then I said earlier that people like to be outside. I always try to design some sort of exterior court as part of a building that I'm doing. Well, that exterior court should generally face southeast.
Okay.
It just should. So that it presents a comfortable environment for people to be. Mm-hmm. They're not sweating in the heat. They get the light of the sun at the right time of the day, protected from the northern winds in the winter. These are just rules embedded into nature that we should follow.
Sarah, I want you to comment on this too, but I'm reminded by the comment about Southeast. I was in a seminary actually in the Southern Hemisphere in Australia some years ago that was designed by an architect. And there was an old standard building, and then they were growing beautifully and they put another building. And the architect decided to put this building just so and a giant tree here and a lovely wooden fence here to promote community. And I got to tell you, that place had more community than I've ever seen in my life. Everybody was just drawn. You would leave the library, you'd go to that space because it was beautiful and the light was right and it was, mm-hmm. you know, warm enough, cool enough. You would go out of the classroom, you go there, you go to the common space, meals, people would eat outside as much as they possibly could. It was just brilliant the way he moved people outside to form community. But Sarah, you want to say anything about creation and
No, that's your a work? Perfect liaison. I think that with my work being my scope of work being primarily on the indoors, I spend much of my thought energy on placement. Tyler mentioned previously that the internal circulation, how people
of
move
people,
about
that is.
Of people.
Right.
And when we say circulation, we're talking about stairways and hallways. So it's not only the people moving about, but the actual physical built elements of that support that movement. I spend a lot of energy on where those go and what flanks it. And so similar to your courtyard, it is of greatest importance to get the relationship of the spaces right. You know, we think a lot about interior design as being represented by the finished pictures of projects and beautiful light fixtures. And I love a beautiful light fixture. But that internal thought pattern of place these social spaces, place the cafe near the stair, near the window, near the front door, so that there is an opportunity to enjoy or run into a colleague, a friend, to build a relationship, to have these happy meetings. Those things enhance.
Happy accidents.
Happy accidents, right. Yes, indeed. But those things enhance relationships. And mm-hmm. what we see is that people that have friends at work, people that have friends where they go, have happier lives in general. They're more mm-hmm. likely to do productive work. And I'm not talking about the bottom line specifically, just actual enjoyment.
And they might not even know why they like working mm-hmm. in a particular space. They just like it. And maybe they think it's a good place to work and I'll stay here. And that's good for everybody, right?
Continue that same thought right into urban design.
Yes, 100%.
Because the streetscape is so important. Buildings that do not address the street, don't have windows along the street, mm-hmm. they're very solid, unapproachable for a half a block long or so, mm-hmm. will create a bad street. Mm-hmm. And by bad, I mean even like ridden more crime, less desirable property values, yeah. just... They can, that interaction, that ability for people to interact with one another and to see and have community on happy accident meeting spaces mm-hmm. is very important all throughout the whole process. Because if you don't have that, sin creeps in and takes over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say the other aspect of this that I feel very strongly about is the sense of creating choice, that people can choose where to be, that there's not, you know, only one bench to sit on.
Mm-hmm.
There's not only one square to be in. And in my instance, there's not only one space to be in, one seat to sit on, one environment to be in. You can only be in a big group. That doesn't work for everyone. And so what we've learned a lot about design is that there are ways to be equitable, not only for people that have different mobility and physical ableness, but also seeking different sources of rest, respite, or sociability. So providing those different opportunities, maybe they don't know why they love it, or maybe they know they love to sit by themselves mm-hmm. and have a moment of peace looking out the window without having to look at every single person's face, because that can be overwhelming too.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move to lightning round. Lightning round means your answers have to be really short. Number one, how old were you when you decided you want to go into architecture or design? How old were you?
Nine.
Six.
I love it. Okay, follow up. You get to answer more than that. How did you become so sure at such an early age? You're just drawn to it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, Tyler? I wasn't going to be an ice skater.
Okay. All right.
I discovered.
Okay. Tyler?
My father always tells the story that I was at a babysitter who cared for me while my mother worked when I was pre-kindergarten. Mm. And he asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, an architect.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's the most satisfying project you ever worked on? You can only do this in like 30 seconds.
A whole campus, working with the different disciplines and incorporating, you know, views of the outdoors and in every.
So it was a whole campus, meaning a big building.
Yeah, it was about 300,000 square feet.
That's big. So. That's like how many millions of dollars? Lots.
A number.
Lots of millions of dollars.
But the other aspect was just incorporating a stair and connection to nature and really engaging the aspect of people moving and health. And it was kind of new at the time. So that was rewarding.
You felt a little bit innovative. Tyler?
A parking garage.
A parking garage, really?
A specific parking garage that you know a lot about.
Because it worked really well to take care of human needs. That's good.
It was just human needs that were very personal to me.
Yeah.
And people I know.
Okay, that's good. If you could, can you mention a little bit about a time when a project you had was ready to go to disaster and somehow you and your team pulled it out of the fire?
It's not on the list.
It's on my list. What's wrong with your list? Okay, you have two sentences. You have two sentences. You're four sentences, maybe. You're on an elevator. You're going from the first floor to the 44th floor, and it's a fast elevator. You have a 25-year-old. You want to give two crystallized sentences of your great wisdom. What would you say?
Mine has punctuation that make it a compound sentence.
Okay. Well, you have two sentences or one very long sentence.
Be patient.
Okay.
Absorb. Take in as much as you can and learn as much as you can before you feel like you need to declare a specialty or limit yourself. Mm.
Good. I like that. Yep. Take your time deciding what your specialty is going to be.
But just say yes to everything in the interim.
Right, right.
Even things that seem bad.
Mm-hmm. So you can learn.
Not truly bad things.
But if you seem bad to you, your tastes. Right.
Don't pick it. Yeah. Absorb.
Your question was about when you were able to save a building?
No. That's the one you both hated.
I came up with an answer for it.
The one you accepted is a couple sentences you give to a 25-year-old on the elevator.
Oh, I know.
But we
can
go back to the disaster if you want to.
The word I would give to a 25-year-old is 50, meaning that's approximately how long your career could be, which is twice your age right now.
Okay.
So don't think you have to do everything on the first building. Mm. Enjoy, even if the first building doesn't seem so fun. Do it well.
Mm. I like it. Your advice is, the two pieces of advice are quite coherent. Mm. All right, do you want to address, just very briefly, of course, how somehow you were pulled out of a disaster? Personally, you did it yourself, your team, saved a building, saved a project. Can you do it?
The one I was thinking of, the client came to us with very strict zoning codes. And it was going to just be a disaster. And the only way to get out of it was to break the rules. But then to do it in such a way that I was able to convince the city council that by breaking the rules, they would have a much better result in the end. And they agreed.
Okay.
And that building was built today and breaks their zoning rules. And everybody in the neighborhood loves it.
But it fulfilled the goals of the city as well as the neighborhood. Sarah?
No, I don't have an example.
That's okay.
But I will say, it's also okay to walk away. And that's been a hard lesson learned sometimes too. Mm. If this is...
I don't think I've
learned
it.
From a bad project, you mean.
If this is not serving... Like, I have stewardship to the project and to the client, but I also need to serve my team. And there have been a very small amounts of times where we say... This team does not need to be
subjected to this.
Yeah.
That's great. One last question. Oh. If you could build any building, no limitations, what would you like to build? No limitations of evil zoning groups or, you know, no financial limitations. What would you like to build?
No joke, I had a client, a potential client, they didn't end up having their technology approved, and so they did not move forward. But it was, I'll say, Uber for helicopters in the lightest sense. They also had infrastructure plans for the U.S.
You would like to have been able to do that?
This was a client that had this on the table, and I was very excited to be assigned their headquarters, adjoined to their manufacturing facilities, pending their aeronautical approvals.
Okay.
That did not pass.
Fascinating.
But that was going to be a cool one. And it did have an Oculus at one point that opened up that we never got even to the point of budgets, but that was going to be a nice one.
Tyler.
If you'd asked me that question when I was young, I would have said an underwater building because I was fascinated with the idea of building buildings on the ocean floor.
But then you realize that water is your great nemesis.
That didn't come about. Mm-hmm. But I would say today, this is less about one building, that my ideal is actually being able to construct or lay out an entire town.
Ooh.
To this notion of, or even taking an existing town that is dilapidated and has failed, and going in and saying, okay, redesign, if you can do anything you want, how do we fix it?
That's pretty grand. That's good. Hey, thanks so much for your time, for your candid answers, and your delightful spirits. It's been wonderful, Tyler, to have you, Sarah. It's been great to have you today.
Thank you. This has been lovely.
Yes, you are lovely as always, Sarah. Oh,
thank you. Likewise.
Working with Dan Doriani is a production of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. We seek to promote faithfulness in the workplace, in education, in discipleship, and in the stories of believers who've applied their faith at work. If you want to put your faith to work and change your corner of the world, visit our website, the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. Look for faithandworkstl.org. That's one word. We'll help you start a cohort with like-minded believers who also want to practice their faith at work. This podcast is donor-supported. To keep us going, please donate on our website. Maybe more importantly, you can support us by listening, by subscribing, by sharing, by liking us, by posting us on your favorite platform, or go old school and tell a friend.